White Network presents the International Jew Study Hour. Reading and commentary on Henry Ford's great classic about Jewish power in America.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and students of the International Jew. Welcome to episode 77 tonight, December 19th, 2013, and it's another good one. I'm Carolyn Yeager.
And I'm Hadding Scott.
And this chapter, which is 72, focuses quite a bit on how the Jews destroyed Sunday as a religious day of rest and of not carrying on business on that day. And that reminded me a lot of Christmas. This is not a real long, this is a little bit on the short side tonight, so I thought we could do some talking. And I would like to talk a little bit about the fact that I have noticed that Christmas seems to have been called off practically where I'm living. This is a community where people go pretty well all out, you know, with lights and so on and outside decorations and trees early, you know, after Thanksgiving, and I don't see a sign of anything until I went downtown to the, was by the courthouse, and they have their usual things out in the lawn, and there's some stuff wrapped around the light poles, but I mean, in the stores, everything, and you know, it's like very strange. It's like, has Christmas been really destroyed, or is it the economy? What do you think, Hadding, and where, how is it where you are?
I don't know. It's like, I think the economy is bad. You know, there's the unemployment is still like 12.7%. The official number they put out is 7%, but they're not counting long-term unemployed. It's down 0.5% from its peak of 13.2, but still very high unemployment.
Yeah, that could be something, but you know, I'm wondering if there's going to be a very bad year for retailing. If that really puts a damper on,
most likely they. I just heard yesterday that there are more homeless people in New York City than ever before, and I read something similar about Boston a few days ago.
Well, we're going to be reading about the New York Jews and how what they did and how they've just how they ruined everything that was going on in that city. And now, you know, they've got all these homeless, and I bet mostly they're not Jews. They're not those Jews that came over, you know, back then and were changing things and not they weren't willing to follow the Sunday laws. So, you know, this is where we end up now. And I wouldn't be surprised if all this, multiculturalism that has been working for so long and people have resisted. There's always been lots of Christmas stuff, but I'm just amazed that, I don't see, anything like that this year. And I don't know how people could, why it's like people don't want to bother. Yeah. Like the people are saying, I'm not going to bother with it.
Huh? Mixing cultures ultimately kills culture.
Right. Yeah, I'm afraid that this is a sign of what it's going to be in the future. That, and then when you see things, like all I see is what's on the internet. But I saw something this evening that was like, oh, you know, some Christmassy thing, and some people were dressed in Santa costumes. It was some woman, you know, looking sexy or something, and some other people around. And I thought, see, this is what they do for Christmas. They just turn it into scum, you know. And I think it might be having an effect. And I'm glad I have the opportunity to bring that up tonight, because it kind of fits into our theme. Well, all right, if you don't have anything else you want to discuss. And, of course, we don't have callers or anything, so... Oh, yes, there is one more thing. Ladies and gentlemen, we will not be having a International Jew program next week. taking the entire week off starting on Monday for me. I'm going to say that today. So I will have a show on Saturday. This, you know, 2 days from now, I'll have my Saturday show, and then won't have a Monday or Thursday or Saturday show on next week, what I call Christmas week, and then be back again. We need a rest. I need a rest. So this is, I will never have another good excuse like Christmas time, that you have a Christmas time. So I thought I would announce that. So Hattie, you're in charge.
Oh, yeah, I might think I'm in charge. All right, chapter 72, Jews as New York magistrates see them. The Dearborn Independent has been frequently importuned to make exposure of the Jewish crime record in New York and other cities, but up to this time has chosen not to do so. The material is mountainous, and the facts are damaging, but the Dearborn Independent will continue to assume that the majority of the Jewish people do not approve of criminal acts, even against non-Jewish life and property. This paper prefers to confine its attention to those matters which are plainly within the purpose and approval of the Jewish leaders. There is a decided criminal element in the Jewish question, and no small part of the criminality flows, directly or indirectly, from the attitude of the Jewish leaders. But the great crime is the introduction of corruptive and anti-American ideas into American life, and Jewish leaders cannot escape responsibility for that. So he's saying actual crimes committed by Jews are not the real problem. A lot of people miss that point.
Oh, so the real problem is
the Jewish ideas. The magistrates of every city with a considerable Jewish population know the facts. In practically every state in the Union, there is today a celebrated case where some Jew, through money or influence, is playing horse with American law. It is locally known, but not generally, except in two or three instances. The local press, deriving 80% of its support from Jewish advertising, is usually very discreet, preferring to leave the matter to the courts. Strange things occur in the courts, such as judges being taken into very lucrative partnerships after giving decisions favorable to wealthy Jewish defendants. That was, of course, the suspicion about Governor Slayton of Georgia around the time of the Leo Frank case.
Right.
The following extracts of opinions given the Dearborn Independent by magistrates of the city of New York are offered in the hope that the Jewish leaders will read and digest them and see, if possible, what a hopeless game they are playing. The Jewish question of today is turning about in the direction of the Jewish question of tomorrow, which is, when are the Jewish leaders going to admit that their game is a losing game? They see it now, but they must admit it and quit it. And it will not be surprising if a mass movement of the Jewish people compels them to do so.
See, now, there's the same thing that we remark on so often, that they think things are going to change, you know, and what the Jews are doing, they can only lose by it. But they haven't seemed to have lost so far, have they?
No.
It's too bad. I mean, it'd be nice to say, oh, they're not playing right, they're not playing fair, and it's not going to work for them, but it does work for them. Terrible. Unless everybody would wake up. That's what it takes.
It appears to me that Zionist Jews are going to drag the United States to its ruin before they admit it and quit it. USA is going broke.
Yeah, there you go. And they must have some plan because they're not worried about it.
The Jewish race, said one of the magistrates, seems deliberately blind to its own faults. Some 12 years ago, General Bingham, then police commissioner, found it necessary to call attention to certain criminal tendencies of the East Side Jews. His criticisms were bitterly resented. I venture to say, however, that there are few men who preside in our inferior courts who will not readily endorse those views of General Bingham in their application to the conditions of the present day. Close quote.
You know, this General Bingham was talked about in the previous chapters in the International Jew. And as I recall, he was driven out of, he was police commissioner. And when he started openly talking about, I don't know how open, maybe he was trying to be careful, but talking about the problem of the Jews and their criminality, they got rid of him. He ended up out. They don't say that here. I remember it, though.
It says here, it was because of General Bingham's criticisms that the New York Kehila was increased in power. Not to clean up conditions, but to shut up the critics.
Yeah.
Quote, the different groups, racial or religious, of New York City have always each supported institutions for the care of its fallen women. We have the Magdalene Home, the Protestant Episcopal House of Mercy, and the Catholic House of the Good Shepherd. The Jews alone are the exception, yet it does not require more than a short experience in the magistrates' courts to convince one that more than two-thirds of the fallen women in the metropolis are of the Jewish race.
I love that.
This fact and the urgent necessity of caring for these unfortunates was laid before some prominent Jews. They gave the assurance that ample provision was being made by a group of wealthy Jewish families to endow an institution of the kind. However, nothing was done or even contemplated. The Jews absolutely ignored the issue, and today we magistrates are compelled, as usual, to commit such Jewish women to the Protestant Episcopal and Catholic homes.
You know, I just have to, I know it's obvious to everybody listening, who will be listening, but it's so sickening how cheap they always are. They won't even take care of their own, and they want to put that cost of that care onto others, onto Christians, and so on. And I mean, well, they do the same thing with the Holocaust survivors in Israel. Go ahead.
I don't think it's just a matter of cheapness. I think they, I don't know how much you read about white, with so-called white slavery. Jews were heavily involved in what they called white slavery, and which was prostitution, right? And most of the women that the Jews were prostituting were Jewish women.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they would take other women too and force them into prostitution, but it was mostly Jewish women. And you know, if you ever watched, you ever watched the Howard Stern show, some of these wretched women that they had on there that were doing things like, oh, I don't even want to describe it, but they were doing some horrendous things of a sexual nature. And they were on the show as
on
as
the show,
streets.
Or they were just talking about it, what they did otherwise.
They're describing things that they intended to do or had done. And they were Jewish women on this on Howard Stern's show. They're talking about these horrendous things that they were doing, and you know, or going to do to attract attention or whatever. You know, Jewish women doing this stuff, and you know, a lot of Jewish women are strippers and, you know, everything else that's sleazy.
Yeah, but I mean, I agree. It's not just financial cheat. It's that they just want to make others do everything for them, you know, and of course pay the bill, but also,
yeah, also you know,
take responsibility and everything.
There's just this penchant for sleaziness, it seems, you know. I don't think they just get into pornography because of, there's money in it. I think they're into it.
Oh, they like
know?
It. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I've slipped my mind now.
Okay.
Oh yeah, there was a Kabbalistic cult, one of those groups called the Illuminati, back in the 1700s, called the Frankists. It was led by a Jew named Jacob Frank. It was a Kabbalistic cult that proselytized to non-Jews. And the daughter of Jacob Frank took it over after he died, and she behaved like a temple prostitute, basically, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's all kinds of lurid crap like that.
Well, I've seen these shows, interviews where these women in porno films and so on. And this one woman, she was more like an executive. She used to be an actress, but she. And they're just talking about it, how it's just, you know, it's just natural stuff. And why be all hung up about this? And it's a business. They're all working for a living. That's what it was kind of like. We're all making a living. This is just the sex industry. We make a living in the sex industry. And it's just sickening, you know, because they want to just make it normal, you know, and make everybody see it as normal. But they like it. If they wouldn't be there if they didn't like it. Yeah. They fit right into it.
All right, continuing. Mm-hmm. Quote, "This is indicative of a strange refusal to look facts in the face if the facts reflect on the Jews. A lawyer, once highly prominent in Jewish circles here, became involved in a blackmailing scandal with a notorious member of his race known as the Wolf of Wall Street. The Wolf was convicted and sent to a federal prison. The lawyer was scathingly denounced by the appellate court and only escaped disbarment because of his age. The Jews of New York deliberately refused to condemn this man's nefarious acts. Only the other day they honored him by dedicating a library to him in one of their charitable institutions and hanging his portrait on the wall. An action such as this smacks a great deal of an absence of moral sense," close quote.
Hey, you know, this made me think of, you know, Bob from D.C., who is, I think everybody knows, uses the name Wolf Wall Street and has his radio program. Now, that must be where he takes it from, this the
Wolf. I don't know, maybe.
Oh, I'm sure it is. Must be. I always wondered about that, why he wanted that name. But, well, I'm going to ask him if I ever have an opportunity.
One magistrate prefaced his remarks by stating that he had no desire to dwell upon any special misdemeanors or crimes that might be considered peculiar to the Jewish race. But he pointed out that a more serious situation than one caused by sporadic criminality had been created by reason of a persistent class movement among the Jews.
Yeah, now I wasn't real clear about that, Hanning, and I didn't notice that it answered it further on. A persistent class movement causes sporadic criminality.
Yeah. Any law, he said, which appears to be obnoxious to the self-centered Jewish element is deliberately ignored by them or opposed with a stubborn resistance, which neither time nor education seems to mitigate. The result is that our magistrates' courts and the court of special sessions are crowded with cases of violations of that character. The newly arrived Jews, especially, are apparently determined to subordinate this country to their own desires, rather than to accommodate themselves to the conditions here, as other races do. The most blatant example of this attitude is in connection with the law relating to Sabbath breaking. Our penal law is plain and specific on this matter. It states, "The first day of the week, being by general consent set apart for rest and religious uses, the law prohibits the doing on that day of certain acts hereinafter specified, which are serious interruptions of the repose and religious liberty of the community. A violation of the foregoing prohibition is Sabbath breaking." Sabbath breaking is a misdemeanor punishable by a fine or by imprisonment in a county jail, and where the offense is aggravated by a previous conviction, the fine and jail sentence are doubled. Yet the various acts specified as Sabbath breaking are violated openly and with insolent impunity by thousands of Jews every Sunday in New York. Their race has much to say about its own religious liberty, but it thinks nothing of outraging the religious liberties of other races. If any serious attempt were made to enforce this statute in the Jewish districts, the police would be compelled to arrest the larger part of the population. These Jews are determined to trade and traffic and to keep their factories and workshops going on the American Sunday. They impose their will upon the greatest city in the United States through silent resistance and the sheer force of numbers. The Jews of whom I am speaking are mostly from Eastern Europe, Russia, Galicia, and Poland.
Now, Galicia is, we got to get this clear about these Jews. Now, Galicia is basically kind of more Russia, isn't it? I always forget where that darn Galicia is.
I think it's like southeastern Poland, sort of.
Yeah, okay. And that's kind of Russian. I mean, that's right there on the Russian border, too. So, you know, so there you go. Always, always it comes up the same thing. The Russian and the Polish Jews are the ones that came here in huge numbers, and they're the biggest problem, of all the Jews.
They are of the first or second generation of immigrants. They generally speak and read only the Yiddish tongue. But it is a deplorable fact that Americanized Jews of prominence openly encourage these ignorant people in their defiance of the law.
And this is you're quoting this from somebody.
It's a magistrate.
Yeah.
Some unnamed magistrate. Whenever Yiddish tradesmen and manufacturers are arrested for Sabbath breaking, hosts of Jewish lawyers spring to their defense, and powerful Jewish societies intervene to protect them. The Jewish Sabbath Alliance, with offices on Fifth Avenue, conducts a constant propaganda among the ghetto people, urging them to insist upon their alleged legal right to pursue their ordinary vocations on the American Sunday. And it provides them with legal counsel when they get into trouble. Jewish lawyers set up the specious claim that these people from Eastern Europe observe another day as holy time, and therefore have a right to labor and traffic on Sunday. Some of the Jewish magistrates encourage this contention by discharging such lawbreakers. Well, there you have Jews undermining the law as members of the establishment.
Yes.
Exactly. But there is no question of religion in these Sunday violations. It is merely money greed. These Jews are so hot after money that they are afraid of losing some if they close their shops on Sunday. This is easily proved by the fact that when the Jews find it to their interest or convenience to observe Sunday closing, they do it by agreement among themselves. This was demonstrated during last summer in Rivington and Delancey streets, and in fact throughout the ghetto. There were signs posted in the shop windows of Jews authorized by an organization calling itself the Independent Ladies Garment Merchants Association, Incorporated. The notice is read, "This store will be closed on Sundays from June 26th until the end of August. The Independent Ladies Garment Merchants Association, Incorporated."
Boy, that's like 2 months.
Yep.
You know, that's a long time for these people
to close
their store. 2 months
of Sundays. Saturdays and Sundays.
Oh, just Sundays. Oh, that's right. Yeah. I'm dreaming.
In other words, these shopkeepers were spending weekends at the Yiddish summer resorts in the Catskills. They didn't want any of their competitors to steal the trade of customers during their absence. So they all agreed to close up. The question of religion did not enter into their minds. Jews of the more intelligent and well-to-do class are also constantly attempting to break the Sabbath laws in sections of the city where their race does not predominate. Non-Jewish merchants have had to organize associations to protect themselves against this unfair competition. If a non-Jew is arrested for Sabbath breaking, he suffers. The Jewish Sabbath breaker goes free. This gives the Jew an unfair advantage. I want to point out here, actually, this whole business of doing business on Sunday was only an advantage for the Jew as long as the Gentiles didn't do it also. Because as soon as, let's say the consumers have some fixed quantity of money that they're going to spend. If they're spending it 6 days a week, then everybody only has to stay open 6 days a week. It cuts everybody's overhead. If somebody's open on Sunday, then some of that money gets spent on Sunday too, and the ones that don't stay open on Sunday miss that money. Whereas if everybody only stayed open 6 days a week, the amount of money would be the same.
Yeah.
Doing business on Sunday thing is only an advantage for the Jews as long as they're the only ones that do it. As soon as everybody does it, it ends up being a net negative for everybody.
Yeah, because you're having your store open, you have that overhead.
Yeah.
And you only have so much traffic. When if it wasn't there, if you weren't open on Sundays, people would go on these other days. So that's what you're saying, and I think that's right. But somehow they still want to do the Sunday thing because they think some people want to go shop on Sunday. I think that the general wisdom though is that if you don't make a sale on a Sunday, they might not do that. You know, they might not buy that thing. They might not come back. So I don't know. You know, the more days that people can go and shop, particularly on weekends, I think they figure is the best for them.
Well, you know, in Germany, they don't have stores open on Sunday.
That's terrific, you know.
I asked my Bavarian friend about this before the show. I said, "Are businesses open in Germany on Sunday?" He said, "What? No, of course not. Sunday is holy. I mean, gas stations and hospitals and police and firefighters are open, you know, but if you go to the city center, the stores are all closed. There might be some stores within a train station for the travelers to buy food and such, but the normal stuff is all closed on Sunday."
Yeah. You know, tourist areas would be open because tourists, they don't deprive tourists of things, on Sunday, so that would be
well, people but in, that are in traveling,
a,
you know.
Yeah, but in a regular city where it doesn't have a lot of tourism, it would be very different. These are just these special cities that people go to. Well, I wish it was that way again. I wish that things weren't open on Sunday. Sometimes it's of course very convenient to be able to go and do some shopping on Sunday, but anyway, I don't know.
Okay. Continuing the quote from the New York City magistrate. Not long ago, there was a large advertising sign posted conspicuously on the platforms of the elevated railroad. A Jewish wholesale house on Fifth Avenue notified buyers that its salesrooms would be open from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. every Sunday afternoon. I thought this was going a little too far, and I called the attention of several of the protective associations to the methods practiced by this firm. The signs soon afterward disappeared. However, such tactics are continually being attempted by Jewish merchants and manufacturers in the Bronx and on the west side of the city, in an effort to gain a business advantage over their non-Jewish competitors. But there are means of putting an immediate and effective stop to all this rascality. This would be by enforcing Section 2149 of the Penal Code, which provides for the forfeiture of commodities exposed for sale on Sunday. The section reads, "In addition to the penalty imposed by Section 2142, all property and commodities exposed for sale on the first day of the week in violation of the provisions of this article shall be forfeited. Upon conviction of the offender by the justice of the peace of a county, or by a police justice or magistrate, such officer shall issue a warrant for the seizure of the forfeited articles, which, when seized, shall be sold on one day's notice, and the proceeds paid to the overseers of the poor, or for the use of the poor of the town or city." This statute is not enforced, but I believe we shall yet be compelled to enforce it in New York. The seizure of the stocks of some of these Jewish shopkeepers would be the most effective lesson one could administer in teaching them to respect the law.
And then there's that thing there that used to be that, see, they're going to use that money to give to the poor. And they had things like that back then, before there was general welfare programs, where they had help for the poor. And the poor were not able to be too proud to get it, you know, but they were grateful for it. But, you know, there, it was not like people were just, except for certain periods in history where people were just left and, you know, walked over and just not cared about it all. There were always programs like this, which is kind of nice. Brings back some kind of nostalgic feelings or something.
Systematic.
Yeah, right. And people actually had a sense of charity and so on. Today's charity is all super organized. You know, you have to give to so much, you know, to this one or that one. And then they have these big they have these big staffs who are using up all the money just to support themselves for the most part.
Yeah, sometimes that's quite extreme too.
Yeah, like with the Red Cross, they're pretty guilty of that. And what's the other one? Oh, I know that. That community chest type thing that they started. And they were forcing people in, where I worked at that time, this is back a little ways, you were forced to donate, to give some of your, a certain amount, or more you could, but at least a minimum amount, of your paycheck to this once a year. It was one of those, you know, all together drives, you know, where they had combined together and everybody supported it and pushed it. And then it was came out that that the expenses to run the thing were so high that by the time they finally had anything left over for the so-called charities, it wasn't that much.
Yeah. Okay, that was the end of the quotation of that magistrate. Another magistrate expressed himself still more forcibly on the Jewish question. Quote, "These people from Eastern Europe," he said, "are tending to destroy all American conceptions of right and justice. Day after day, my court is crowded with Jewish people. I am compelled to fine and warn them. The attitude of the women is especially truculent. they have adopted a misconception of woman's suffrage. They say to me, this is a woman's country. Woman can do what she likes. Men can't.
I found that hilarious. They actually talk like that. Well, I guess they're pretty clever, huh? They're trying to take advantage.
There is no denying the fact that New York is falling more and more under the dominance of Jews. Americans are gradually being driven from public life. It will not be long before we shall have a Jewish mayor and a Jewish board of aldermen. This in itself should be no great misfortune were it not for the tendency of the Jew to abuse his power. He is ambitious and restless to obtain authority, but the moment he gets it, he becomes oppressive. This is evident already wherever the Jews obtain monopolies. A friend, a young man, came to me the other day bitterly complaining that he was deliberately being driven out of business by the Jews. He was the owner of a prosperous laundry. But the large machine laundries of the city are now mostly in the hands of Jews. They refuse to do his work for him, saying, "You are not a member of our syndicate." This is one of the new phases of the Jewish invasion, the almost complete absorption of the laundry business. Resuming the quote, "We all remember the time when the Jews began to clamor for special newsstand privileges. They formed Jewish organizations of news dealers until the business was entirely in their hands. While they still had non-Jewish competition, they were obliging and attentive enough. They did anything to curry favor. But today they carry themselves like lords. No Jewish news dealer in New York will deliver newspapers to his non-Jewish customers on Jewish holidays." In the New York Post Office, where there are now some 11,000 employees, about one half of whom are Jews, the same conditions exist. The Jewish postal employees complained that they were being deprived of their constitutional rights if they were compelled to work on Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, and on Yom Kippur, the Jewish Day of Atonement. The postmaster was compelled to grant their demands, at the same time pointing out that leaves of absence could not be granted to Christian employees on Christmas, New Year's, and Good Friday. Otherwise, the post office would be swamped with mail.
Yep. Well, it's true, actually.
You can't get our holidays, and theirs too.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Yeah, so they just gave paid holidays for Yom Kippur and Atonement. And, oh, that's just, no, the Jewish 2 days, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, they gave paid holidays to the Jews and not to the non-Jews? How could they do that? Now, they might have been able to not compel them to work, but maybe they didn't pay them. And maybe then Christians got to do their work and got overtime, something, I don't know. Well, that, none of that's real clear, but you can't let people off on Christmas. Well, Good Friday, well, no, because that's Easter. Because there's too much mail and packages. Although, if Christmas disappears, like I'm saying, it seems to be doing this year where I live, there won't be that problem. Eventually, there won't be any Christmas mail.
Okay. All right. That was the end of that quote. Mm-hmm. Another, by that magistrate, another phase of this Jewish insistence upon special rights was emphasized by one of the magistrates. "I have often observed," he said, "that there is generally a good result when a Jew settles in a small New England town where there are only 3 or 4 stores. The situation develops social stimulus and competitive spirit. Too often there is a tendency toward dry rot among the native population. They stagnate. But where Jews assemble in large numbers, as they do in New York City and the industrial towns of New Jersey, they immediately develop a class and racial consciousness that is unfortunate. It is not surprising that Jews should cling to their traditional customs, but it is a peculiar fact that of the 40 different nationalities in New York, it is only one race, the Jewish, which persistently tries to impose its own modes of life upon the mass of the people. One dangerous feature of this tendency is a constant effort to put upon the statute books laws which favor the Jewish race, and placing weapons into the hands of the mischievous and litigious. In the penal law of the state of New York, there is a statute which is outrageous in its import and should be stricken from the code. In effect, it renders a man guilty of a misdemeanor if he ventures to have a process served upon a Jew on Saturday. He is equally guilty if he dares to serve a process which is made returnable on Saturday. It is a notorious fact that a large percentage of Jews deliberately alter their names. It is a notorious fact that a large percentage of Jews deliberately alter their names in order to conceal their race. Yet, if a man should induce his lawyer to procure a civil action to which a Jew is a party to be adjourned to Saturday for trial, in ignorance of the fact that the borrowed American name conceals a Jew, that man renders himself liable to fine or imprisonment.
So they managed to pass this law in New York, which is always all full of Jews, which really was totally unfair and wrong. That's really something. The privileges that they get.
This is Section 2150 of the penal law. Its exact wording is as follows. Maliciously serving process on Saturday on person who keeps Saturday as holy time, whoever maliciously procures any process in a civil action to be served on Saturday upon any person who keeps Saturday as holy time and does not labor on that day, or serves upon him any process returnable on that day, or maliciously procures any civil action to which such person is a party to be adjourned to that day for trial, is guilty of a misdemeanor. Advantage was taken of this statute by a Jew in the city of Rochester to evade the payment of goods which had been delivered to him. To evade the payment. The summons which had been served upon him was made returnable upon a Saturday, and upon the return day the Jewish defendant, evidently at the instigation of his Jewish lawyer, appeared in the action for the sole purpose of objecting to the jurisdiction of the court upon several grounds, but more especially for the reason that the defendant was a Jew, and that as such he uniformly observed Saturday of each week as a holy time. This case was used to tie up the business of two courts until it was finally taken to the appellate division of the Supreme Court, where Judge Adams rendered a decision in which he said, in order to give this section the construction claimed by the defendant's counsel, we must hold that the legislature has not only utterly ignored this elementary principle, that to constitute a crime there must be not only the act itself, but a criminal intent must accompany the act, but, in violation thereof, has declared that, while in the case specified, malice or intent must exist in order to constitute the crime of procuring a process to be served on Saturday, or of procuring a civil action to be adjourned to that day, the crime of serving a process which is returnable on Saturday may be committed without any intent accompanying the act.
Huh. That's terrible. That's saying that, you have to have a criminal intent for crimes. This particular crime of serving a process on a Jew on Saturday, you don't have to have the intent of doing that to call it a crime. Is that what that's saying? Maybe if you read on, we'll get the answer. But that's what it sounds like. I mean,
well, I haven't finished reading the decision yet.
Right. Okay.
This proposition, it seems to us, has only to be stated to render its absurdity manifest.
Yes, right.
For the person who served the summons in this action, as is generally the case, was a public officer, and it is fair to assume that he performed his official duty in this instance without knowing or having any reason to suppose that the party served regarded one day of the week as more sacred than another. Oh, I don't know if I'm reading the same thing or not. It is true that the defendant is a Jew, and certain racial characteristics may have manifested themselves to such an extent as to acquaint the officer with that fact. But there are other religions than the Jewish which require the observance of the seventh day of the week as holy time. And, consequently, if the rule contended for is to obtain, an officer must somehow ascertain, in every instance before serving a process, that the party upon whom it is to be served does not come within the favored class. The favored class. Otherwise, he renders himself amenable to the statute. It is inconceivable that the legislature intended that a person thus serving a process returnable on Saturday, in ignorance of the fact that he was in any way interfering with the religious liberty of the party served, should be regarded as a criminal, and it is equally certain that a conviction under such circumstances would be absurd and unjust, if not impossible. A construction of a statute, therefore, which leads to such a result, should manifestly be avoided, if practicable. Judge Adams thereupon reversed the judgment of the county court and of the municipal court with costs.
Well, now, so... Who is he helping there?
The non-Jew defendant was helped.
But he still had to pay the costs. The costs were reversed too?
Well, I think it means that the guy that was prosecuted got reimbursed.
Okay.
I think that's what it means.
Yeah. Good.
Now, Jewish politicians and Jewish lawyers are clever enough, as a rule, continued this magistrate. They're clever enough, as a rule. Therefore, it seems the more surprising that they should waste their time and efforts in placing such laws on the statute books and trying to establish precedents by means of them. It is very stupid business. The ultimate effect is calculated to bring ridicule upon the Jew and awaken suspicion, dislike, and enmity against his race.
Yeah, well, here they're talking about they want to, I've got here, anti-Semitism. This is the ultimate, I forgot, I wasn't paying attention here. Sorry. Bring ridicule upon the Jew. Yeah, you see, they say, oh, you're bringing ridicule upon us. Oh, you're treating us unfairly. You know, it's just an early stage of anti-Semitism, or an example.
Well, what they're doing is they're exhibiting chutzpah.
Yeah.
They're doing things that are unreasonable, you know, and maybe they do it in a calculated way. Maybe it's like a Marxist dialectic, where they demand way more than what they think they ought to have, or, you know, way more than they expect to get, in the hopes that, you know, some compromise solution will be, you know, less than what they demanded, but more than what they've got. You know, that's so-called Marxist dialectic, which is really nothing more than like haggling in a Middle Eastern bazaar, you know.
I think it is calculated, for sure. You know.
Well, they certainly have gotten a lot of concessions that are unreasonable, and there are a lot of impositions on the white population of the United States today that have been in place for decades now that are very unreasonable.
Yeah, and if they ask for way more than is reasonable, and then they get less than that, then they can still say that they're not being treated right and they didn't get what they thought they should get and so on.
Well, it's just in the nature of haggling that they're going to ask for more than they expect to get. But we give it to them. We give them everything they want.
Because we're not hagglers. We're not, you know, we don't understand haggling and don't like it either.
Another of the magistrates commented on the fact that in London, Jews were permitted to trade on Saturday by Act of Parliament, but only within the circumscribed limits of their ghetto.
Did you say Saturday or Sunday? I mean, Sunday. I thought you said Saturday. Yeah.
Yeah, in London, Jews were permitted to trade on Sunday by Act of Parliament, but only within the circumscribed limits of their ghetto. Quote, "When I was in London several years ago," he continued, "I was shown one of the Jewish Sunday markets in full swing. Opposite it was an English church, but trade was confined to the Yiddish district. But compared with New York, there is only a small Yiddish population in the British metropolis. Our millions of Jews are scattered throughout the city, and if we were to relax our Sunday laws in their favor, it would mean goodbye to the Christian Sabbath. I cannot understand the attitude of the Jews on this question. They cheapen their own status by their conduct."
Well, that's a kind of an odd ending, isn't it?
Yeah.
Kind of leaves you hanging.
Well, twice there, which is that the Jews make themselves look bad with their chutzpah-driven behavior. But we tolerate it. And why do we tolerate it? Because they start the violins playing in the Holocaust story. Oh, yeah, but there's another Holocaust.
Yeah, and back then they didn't even have the Holocaust, and they were still getting their way. You know, this thing here, goodbye to the Christian Sabbath. Well, it has gone goodbye. You know, it hadn't gone goodbye yet at this time. This was published, I mean, this was in their newspaper in 10 December 1921. Seems like we're always in 1921, but I guess that's when from the beginning of the year to the end, they had one every week or so or something. But no, not every week, but, well, and you know, at that time they were still holding on to the Christian Sabbath, but now there's no such thing really. You know, it's just another day.
Well, we certainly don't have, you know, some places I think you will still find that the stores are closed on Sunday, but most places I've been in the United States, no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, here's my thought about keeping stores open all the time. I had said earlier in this program that, well, sometimes it's convenient. See how that goes. Well, you know, sometimes I like to be able to go to a store on Sunday, but that's not a good reason to make a whole, change your culture and make a whole law. And why I think the Jews like this, apart from taking away our Sabbath and making their Saturday, well, there's nobody thinks that Saturday is holy except them, and but they're allowed to get days off and so on. But you know, it keeps people in a commercial mood all the time. And what I'm starting to think is that, well, I love holidays because it's like things are closed, you know, and it's like, oh, this feels like a day where I can, you know, just catch up on things, do what I want. I don't feel like I got to get so much done or something. It's like, you know, a little bit of a rest time, and we do need that. And by not having this, and this is the Jewish spirit, to be doing business all the time, commercial, to have that commercial nature, and that's just more of the driving of Judaizing our society and us, and making us fit in to their way of life, which they are much better at than we are. So, you know, we're at a disadvantage living their way of life.
Well, they have certain advantages because of, you know, the way they work as a network, you know, whereas the rest of us will deal as individuals. they have their network that they use, which is exclusive to the rest of us, right? Mm-hmm. So they have kind of an unfair advantage there. I wanted to say something. There was something in there about how all the Jews will rally around a particular Jew that's a wrongdoer. Mm-hmm. I was in a discussion a couple of days ago with a Jew who started playing the violin and moaning about how when one Jew does wrong, all the Jews are blamed for it. You know, I said, listen, when one Jew does wrong, all the Jews circle the wagons around him. And I brought up the example of the Leo Frank case. I also mentioned Jonathan Pollard, the spy. That the Jews will all get around this one Jewish criminal and defend him and say that, well, no matter what the evidence is, they'll say he's innocent or, you know, blah, 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 whatever it is, they'll defend him every way possible. And when the Jews do that, when they defend a criminal just because he happens to be a Jew, they are taking his guilt onto themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They are saying...
Are they going to go to hell then? Go ahead.
I said it's like the Jews at the crucifixion saying his blood be on us. They're asking for collective guilt when they do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought that that's an interesting point, Hattie. And I thought that I wanted to come back too to this business about how that Jews have all these lawyers. Have all these Jewish lawyers, and then there's these big organizations with the big shots and the prominent people in them who see to it, although they don't get their hands dirty, but they see to it that all these Jewish criminals, no matter how low, no matter how low they are in the ghetto, get legal help. And that's that kind of networking that is really effective. And we can't seem to do it. I guess I'm as guilty as anybody. Fight among ourselves.
Yeah, they also make sure that they make sure that the non-whites get legal help for overturning Whitey too.
Yes, right. They do that now. So, and this is what, if we could do this, if we can organize a network for whites for ourselves, but they're always working at making it. Turning people off at that and saying, oh, you can't do that. That's terrible for you to do that. And I don't know why we've got these blind spots that we can't see through what they're doing. Most people, they just won't. You know, I know that if you bring up the word Jew to most white people still today, they will say, oh boy, you know, oh boy, the Jews, you know, or they'll just get freaked
out. Well, some of them will.
Run away.
A lot of people are waking up, you know, especially since... you know, they were already starting to wake up, you know, before September 11th, 2001. A lot of people were taking note of things like the treatment of the Palestinians and stuff like this. And they got condemned at the Durban Anti-Racist Conference for the treatment of Palestinians. Head of the UN said, stop using the Holocaust as an excuse. And since September 11th, with all these gigantic multi-trillion-dollar wars for Israel, that criticism of Jews has not decreased.
Okay.
People are seeing things.
Well, we have to say goodbye. I want to wish all our listeners a Merry Christmas and remind you that we will not be doing a live show next week. We're taking the week off, and we'll be back the following week with the live show, a new chapter. So Merry Christmas, everyone. And Hattie?
Yeah, Merry Christmas.
Thanks for listening. The International Jew Study Hour will return next week, exclusively on the White Network.